And I see it here. We have to get that straightened out. Brilliant. Okay. So, Ollie, if you look here, that's what they're seeing up there, and that way you know, okay? So first we have to figure out, how would you like me to call you, Ollie or Oliver?
It doesn't matter as long as you called me for lunch.
Excellent. Good. Ollie it will be. Okay, so what we have up here is a wonderful little relic that you found in your father's estate, right?
Yes.
And if everybody looks up here, you notice this is a day book. It's from May 1935. Look on Thursday the 16th. And it says Goldie Mink 66, and I have no idea what that means. JSG2, same. But then the next line says, Ollie was born in Mourn. That's that one right there. Excellent.
And he spelled it O-L-L-Y. And then when they put my birth certificate, it says Oliver. And then after that, they wrote it Ollie, O-L-L-I-E. So just call me for lunch and I'll be fine.
Excellent. Okay. What we want to look at is your first picture. This is the one where you're wearing the dress.
Yes.
Can you explain why you're wearing a dress?
All the boys wore dresses at that time, at that age.
At that age?
Yes, in the Amish church. Yeah.
Yeah. So your parents went to the Amish church and you wore a dress. I'm gonna let out a little secret. I wore a dress too until I was almost 2 years old. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very good. So you notice that Ollie likes his thumb there. Isn't that sweet? And here's a couple of years later. Maybe you're what, 4 years old here?
I think I was 3 and my sister Wilma 2.
There's Ollie. Isn't that wonderful? Oops. That's a young man now. But before we get there, I want you to just tell us a little bit about an early memory you had with your father. Like what was something way back when you were a little boy and something that happened?
Well, now, the first thing I clearly remember in my mind was when I was 5 years old. Other things somewhat, but that was when I was 5 years old. My dad bought a tractor. Up to that point, we were horse farming. And the tractor was a little 9N Ford Ferguson 1940 year model, and it was in 1940 when we got it. I remember when it was delivered and when they took it off the cart, and the truck and the cart went down the road, and Dad said, Ollie, I'm getting a ride. And I had never anticipated that he would give me a ride. It was a real surprise for me, but of course I accepted. And I still remember that very clearly.
So that was the beginning of a long career of farming with a tractor for you.
Yes, it was.
Uh-huh.
I only have one left.
Only one tractor left, mm-hmm. But it's a good one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is it a 9N?
It's an 8N.
An 8N, yeah.
Ten years.
Newer.
And I got that one at my father-in-law's sale when it was about 12 years old. And I used it a lot over the years. I put a loader on it, so I hauled many a load of manure with that tractor, loaded many a load. But I've taken it off, and I don't use it much anymore. And when I sold my farm material about 3.5 years ago, the boys asked, aren't you going to sell that Ford? I had already had it overhauled not long before then, and I repainted it myself. I used it for a couple of years down at Yoder with at the birth center. Would take the wagon through with the babies. And so I said, no, I'm not going to sell it. I paid $530 for it at the sale, and my son said, if you'd sell it today or on this auction, it'll bring at least $3,000, probably $4,000. But I said it's not for sale.
Excellent. So we have a picture of that, but we're a little mixed up with the pictures. We'll find it for everyone to enjoy soon. So I want to talk a little more about how you started farming here in Kansas. We're gonna hit other things later on, but we want to do the farming thing for a little bit. So when you came out here, you worked for your future father-in-law. Is that how it was?
Yes. Well.
And who was that?
Levi Miller.
Levi Miller. Yes.
At first I worked in carpentering with Vernon Miller.
Oh yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And what year would that have been?
That would have been in
57 maybe?
Yeah, I think so.
1957. Yeah, it's a previous millennium. And what did you do with Vernon? What were any projects that you can remember doing with him?
Oh, no, except on time, but I remember when we took a rest. We took lunch hour. And then the rest of us boys were all together eating, and Vernon just didn't show up for a while. And then he came and said that somehow his belt was all tangled up, and he doesn't know what happened. And boys couldn't help from laughing, and then he said, "Ollie, was that you?" Something I remember.
You mean his fan belt, or what belt was this?
His tool belt. Yeah.
Oh, you tangled up his tool belt.
Well, what I did was in the back, when he was working something there, I just went and took the ends and went through the loops. So when he pulled, then it locked.
Oh, my word. I hope you got a dock in pay for that.
Vernon still likes me.
Well, that's good, yeah. So when you started working for your father-in-law, you were just a hired hand, right?
Yes.
And that's at the farm where Dwight and Karen and you still live, right?
Yes.
So how much did he pay you per month?
He paid me $125 a month in the wintertime and $150 a month in the summertime. But we got our milk and eggs free.
Was this after you were married that
Yes.
you were doing this? Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was in 1959, that would have been the circumstance. And where did you live exactly right when you got married?
The little house there on the farm.
The tenant house.
Yeah.
I think most of you know that little house. We should have a picture of it. And I think 100 different people have lived in that in the last 100 years. But Ollie and Emma started out there. And I think that's just wonderful. So you were farming that farm from about 1959 until when did you stop farming?
About 3 years ago.
Okay, so we got to do the math. 60, that's 41 plus 17. How much is that, anybody? 58 years? I think so. So you've farmed 58 summers over there. That's quite an accomplishment. And you didn't skip any summers there. And tell us a little bit, when you started out farming there, what were the things that you were doing? Like you had sheep?
No. My father-in-law had a dairy. Mm-hmm. And so we milked the cows, did his chores.
Anything else? Did you have pigs?
No, not sometimes, maybe one or a couple of them, but not really.
Just
huh?
For yourself, yeah.
The main thing was dairy.
Dairy. And so what crops did you raise?
Wheat and some barley and alfalfa. Some on Milo at the first years we raised Milo.
Did you put that in the silo?
We put sorghum silage in the silo.
Silo,
yes.
Okay, and then you thrash Milo. Okay. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about right after you got married. And so you're living in the tenant house. That was in 59. And then in 1960, you had your first son, and it was Laverne J.
Yes.
And then tell us what happened. Why isn't Laverne J with us anymore?
At five and a half months of age, he died. We had contacted the doctor, and he came out, but it was too late. And he said he thinks it was a virus pneumonia.
Virus pneumonia. So he was sick, and you knew he was sick, called the doctor, and the doctor used to come out to do house calls. And before he got there, Laverne just simply died.
Yes.
5.5 months old. Wow. Now, there's some other sort of hard things that happened right at the time that you started your married life with Emma. The other one was your wedding. You hurried up your wedding a little bit because your mother-in-law was dying of cancer. Is that right?
That's right.
Levi Clare.
Yes.
So tell us just a little bit about the circumstances of the wedding, because it was going to be here at this church, but why wasn't it then?
The church house was being built at that time. It wouldn't have been ready up here, but they thought they could have the wedding in the basement. And then with my brother-in-law, Emma's mom, being the condition she was, they decided that won't work to take her to the basement.
Because she couldn't go down the stairs to get to the wedding.
So we had the wedding at Elrica.
At Elrica, in the Learning Center. It used to be the gym. That's where your wedding took place. Mm-hmm. And that was in 1959.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, so it seems like you had kind of a rough time of it there. And then not long after, you switched and moved into the big house, which is on the site where Dwight and Karen live now. You went off to town to buy some stuff. And then what happened? Tell us about that.
Yes, the landlady gave us permission to put a stool in the bathroom. We had a bathroom with a tub, but no stool.
No stool.
But she gave us permission to do that. And we went to town and got some things lined up, came home, and the house was down.
It was burnt. It burnt while you were in town.
Yes, and a lot of neighbors were there at the time, but they never called us on our cell phone.
Huh. That was inconsiderate of them, wasn't it?
No, they didn't. We didn't know until we came home.
Wow. So this is all at the beginning of your start out here. I mean, what did you feel like about that? Did you feel like, God was trying to tell you to go back to Ohio, or?
I did not.
You did not?
I just thought that's the way it's supposed to be.
And you kept milking the cows?
Yes, that evening. Perry Lee had milked sometimes for us a little, and he heard about this, so he came out and milked that evening and the next morning, too. He was a good neighbor for any time we needed him. If we went on trips, he was available. Well,
Perry Lee's listening to us from his house. I had lunch with him yesterday, and he told me all about milking for you, and he was very eager to hear about that. So hi, Perry Lee. Wait. Hey, he's over here. He came. Wonderful. Excellent. Well, if anybody needs a pinch hitter to milk their cows, Perry Lee comes well recommended. Wonderful. Wonderful. So from there, I guess things went up a little bit better, and we'll get to that, but we want to go back to your earlier times now. And in this picture that we have up right now, how old are you about right there?
22. That was now, when I was in 1W service.
You were in 1W service. Let's talk about 1W service a little bit. Where did you go?
Cincinnati, Ohio. Irvin Hostetler went with me. Some of you know Irvin Hostetler. And we went and applied for a job, and I wanted to be in surgery, as an orderly in surgery. But they didn't have any openings. But they had an opening for housekeeping, and one of those jobs was mopping the operating rooms in the afternoons.
This was at a hospital, right?
Hospital, yeah. General Hospital. Yeah. And in the mornings, I would do flooring, buff floors and clean floors, and all over there was seven, the surgery room was on the seventh floor. X-ray room was also there. And some of you know Lester Yoder over at Garnett. He was with us there too, and he'd worked as an orderly in surgery. So I had asked for a position as an orderly when I first came there, and they didn't have an opening, like I said. So we did that, and when I got to the operating rooms, I learned to know everybody around there, and I was there every afternoon to clean up. Mm-hmm. And then, after just a short time, a young orderly in surgery, he wanted to go back to school. So the assistant supervisor there, their name was June Tennis, she came and said, "Oliver, this young boy is going back to school. We need somebody here, and we'd like to have you." And I said, "I'd like to come, but Mrs. Schweinfurth, she'd get a fit."
What was her name?
Mrs. Schweinfurth.
Schweinfurth.
Black lady.
Yeah, that's a good name.
And she said, "Well, she can't do anything about it." I said, "I know, but I don't want to make her mad." And then I said, "I'll tell you what I'll do. If you go to the personnel office and you apply for me and I get the job, I'll come." And she said, "Is that all it takes?" And she went to the personnel office, came back and said, "You've got the job." See, I learned to know all the nurses there and a lot of the doctors just for those month or so that I'd been there cleaning up. And so I found this Mrs. Schweinfurth one day. She met me when I was cleaning out there, and she said, "Oliver, I hear you'd like to go to work in surgery." Well, I said, "That's what I applied for when I first came, but there was no opening, but now they're asking me to." "All right, we'll just let you go up there and work with Miss Stangers, and you'll find out what kind of a person she is." Miss Stangers was a deaconess.
A deaconess?
Yes, an older deaconess.
In what church? It wasn't Amish.
No. I think Methodist, I'm not sure.
Methodist, the deaconess. They have deaconesses. And we should look into that.
And so that's when I came up and started working there. Mm-hmm. And I got a better acquainted with the employees there than I ever had before even. Mm-hmm. And there was an older man that I worked with, and he did not like colored people. So, but he took his turns to go get people. We brought them up to surgery. We had 5 surgery rooms and 3 large rooms. And so I delivered these to the room that I was asked to deliver to, and sometimes I would clean the area that they wanted to do surgery on, but not usually, because I was too busy with other things. Mm-hmm. And then after surgery, they'd call me to take this patient to the recovery room.
And you put them in a wheelchair? How would you haul them?
No, on a cart.
On a cart?
On a table.
On a table?
Yes.
With wheels on it?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. And then, down the elevator?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Then I took them to the recovery room, and after that, they were ready to go to their rooms. Uh-huh. And then this black lady, she, like I said, the other orderly didn't much care for black people, so I got to go with about all the patients to take them back, and she went with me. And one day she said, "Oliver, I'd like to have you come to our church sometime." I said, "Yeah, I'd like to." And she said, "Where it is?" And so one Sunday I was kind of by myself. Urban Hostetter had gone home, and so I went.
How many boys were there from Plain City? Then?
6 boys.
6 boys. Mm-hmm. And were they all Amish?
From the Amish.
From Amish. They were beachy Amish but just for a little bit.
Yeah, they actually, okay. Some of them were not members. It's a sad story.
Yeah. Okay, but go on with.
And so she told me where the church house was, and so on a Sunday morning I drove downtown and found the church house and walked up to go in, and then I saw her about 20 feet ahead of me. And I just walked on behind her. I didn't want her to know that I was there. And that was called Revelation Baptist Church. Now, that was the wildest church I was ever in. I shouldn't say wildest, the most, you know.
Yeah, puts us to shame.
More lively than any Pentecostal church I was. I've got a story there, too. And so she didn't know I was there until after the service.
And was she jumping up and down?
I don't know that she did in that time. But
there were people doing that.
Oh, it was.
Off the floor, both feet off the floor.
Up the choir, one got so wild that the ushers went up and got him, took him down, dragged him down to the wall.
He was getting out of hand.
Yes.
It was like quenching
about
the
halfway
spirit,
out,
wasn't it?
Halfway out, then actually he got out of their hands and jumped around. They grabbed him again and took him on out. And
wow.
They had nurses distributed in their uniforms evenly on the sides. And all I saw them do was if some parents started jumping and hollering, maybe they'd take the children or something like that.
To keep them safe.
Nobody.
This was
hurt.
In 1956 in Cincinnati, Ohio.
And then the next day, then I went out to meet her in the middle aisle when she was walking mm-hmm. out. And then, Oliver, I didn't know you were here. And then we walked back together and we went in each our vehicle and went home. The next morning, next day, when we were taking patients down, we were waiting at the elevator for an elevator, and she said, Oliver, how'd you like the service yesterday? I said, it was very interesting.
Oh, you were
said,
so tactful.
Does your church get lively like that? I said, no, they don't. Then later, I visited another church, and
this was the Pentecostal church.
That was the Pentecostal church now, yes.
You expected more from them.
And so they were floor orderly. I took the patient down and was on my way back to the elevator, and he came over and said, Oliver, we're having revival meetings in our church this week. Would you want to come some evening? Yeah, I said, I'd like to. Where is it? Oh, he said, wait a minute. It's Pentecostal. Maybe you'd rather not. Yeah, I said, I'd like to come. Okay, so he told me where it was. And I took my buddy with me, Irvin Hostetler. We went downtown, went to the church. And that evening, it was Reverend Fox and his wife. Reverend Fox was the evangelist. This was revival meetings. And there were two young boys. I just assumed they were probably Reverend Fox's sons, but they were not. And I found out by... They did things like special music and guitar playing, and then they were asked to come from the back down the center aisle and hand out cards. Tomorrow evening, we're going to have divine healing. You keep one and pass it on down the line. And the usher had set me right by the middle aisle, right about in the middle of the whole sanctuary. And one of these boys came up, handed me a package, and keep one and send the others down the line. Then he's bend over and ask me quietly, are you Mennonite boys? I said, yes. He said, I am too. I looked up at him and said, what's your name? He said, Troyer. I said, that's mine. It is. I want to talk with you after church. Yeah, I do too. The church lasted invitation after invitation. It lasted so long. And so, I told Irvin, let's go on home. Well, I'll leave my phone number, my name and the phone number with an usher. And I asked the usher, you see that certain man up there? And he said, yes. Would you give that to him after church? He said, yes, I will. Okay. A couple of days later, he called me. Is this Troyer? And I said, yes, it is. I'm the other Troyer. Oh, yeah. And so we met together, and we went to their house, where they were staying, and then one day they came to our house where we were staying, and then we had some good conversations. And then he said, and then the other one was his brother. I found out then there. And then he said that they were with the Amish church in Holmes County, Ohio, and their dad was getting kind of tired of some things that were going on, and so they started going to a Mennonite church there. And he just sent the children down the road a ways. He said, we were scared. We were never in a church house before. And then they joined that Mennonite church. Then they went to Florida. And there they attended a Pentecostal revival meeting. And he said, and that's where we got the Spirit. And we talked on, and I had wished I could connect to see how we related. I knew it wasn't close. But they left their way, and we went our way, and I hadn't given too much thought of that for about 50 years. And then I wished I could find these boys again. So I used to go to Holmes County every year for meetings at that time. And I always tried to leave an extra day or two to get around, find cemeteries. There's over 100 Amish cemeteries there. And
in Holmes County?
Yes.
Did you visit all of them?
No, I didn't. But I did enough to find some things. I found the cemetery and the grave of my grandchildren out here's great, 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 great grandmother.
Really? Was she a Troyer?
She was a Mast.
She was a Mast. Ah.
And then married a Troyer.
And married a Troyer, yeah. Well, good for her.
Yeah.
But these two brothers weren't your relatives.
Well, I didn't know until then when I... Dwight's dad, I told him in the evening I was there for supper, and I told him, tomorrow I have the day off. Tomorrow evening I have a meeting again. Tomorrow I'm going to drive around Holmes County, and I'm going to find some family that knows about this Troyer family, and I'd like to meet these boys again. Well, he said there's a Troyer family right across the hill over there. I'll bet he might know something about it. I'll go with you tomorrow morning. So he went with me and came in and introduced myself, and we sat down and visited a little bit. Then I told him my story. And he said, listen until I was finished, and he said, those boys are my first cousin. Do you know where they live? Well, I think one's in Virginia and one in Florida. Anyhow, time went on, and then I got some information there of the names of the family, of the boys. And then Harold Nisley, he went on the internet and found these boys' names and phone numbers. And two of them, the actual two that they were, both said no good number. But another one, a brother, said, yeah, they're my brothers. So I got the information. And we went to Florida, and about a year or so after that. And on the way home, we stopped at the one place, came on home, and we went to the East Coast to visit our children. And from there to the southern Indiana, we came about 20 miles near to the other one, and stopped and visited him. And both of them, we just said, we'll visit a while and we'll go down the road. And both of them said, no, you don't. You stay here for dinner. And the last one said, and you stay for the night. So we did.
Very good. So 50 years later, you're connected. Wonderful. So we've been looking at some pictures here while you were talking, because I have to keep moving it or it dies. And we have this wonderful picture, and we want to just talk a tiny bit about it, because you all know these people. So the man all the way over there on the far side is Paul L. Miller. And we think he's singing How Great Thou Art or something like that. And in the middle, we have Dan L. Miller, his brother, and then their little sister, Emma. Isn't that a wonderful picture? And if we go, I don't know who these are some fine young ladies from out here in Kansas, 1955, and I don't know who they are. Tell us who they are. Do you recognize them?
Ask Emma, I think.
Oh, are you on here, Emma? Which side are you? We can't tell. You're all the way over there. Who's in the middle? Harley Emma's in the middle, and who's the other one? Laura Nisley. This is a blast from the past. You notice how synchronized they are there on the couch? I like that. Yeah. Good-looking women, huh? And so you came out here and you spotted Emma. Is that how it was?
Yes, after...
She came in to you.
No, after surgery. After after my hospital stay, then I came to Kansas to visit my cousins.
Your cousins. Ah.
And then David L. caught me here and said, we need help up at Red Lake, Ontario. Would you want to go up there for the summer?
He talked you into it.
Well, he didn't do much talking into it. He just mentioned I said yes.
And you said yes. Now, we want to stop and talk about cousins, because you're into genealogy, and I want people to know how many cousins you have out here. So let's see. Your mom's name was Barbara
Bontrager
before she married Eli Troyer. And she had sisters, and they lived out here. And I'm going to name them, and some of you will know who they are. There's Susan. She married Fred Utsi, and her daughter, Mary Utsi, lives just down the road here in the trailer court. Oh, did she
not
move
Mrs. Finn, not, no? She lived
Mary,
over.
Mary. Mary. Is it? Am I confused?
Susan.
Mary is married to Ray Kaufman.
She lives.
Right, but her mom was Susan.
Yes.
That's what I'm trying to say. Mary and Ollie are first cousins.
Yes.
As well as you are first cousins with Maynard. And then this is another one of your mother's sisters. Lizzie married Dan A. Nisley. And who are his children?
Harvey.
Harvey, right here. So you're Harvey's first cousin, too. Mm-hmm. And Sam D., of course, may rest in peace. And then Mandy, Barbara, and Clara, who also are no longer here with us. And then Anna married Roman Mass. That's another of your aunts.
Yes.
So you're related, your first cousins, to Eli Mass, which I think is kind of amazing. Because he has the best malaprops of anybody in the world. I love listening to Eli talk. And then there's Johnny. And then what's Johnny's brother's name, who's your first cousin? He lives in the manor now.
Melvin.
Melvin. Some of you visit Melvin. This is also Ollie's first cousin. And then finally, Fanny, Aunt Fanny, married John Helmuth. And their son, Eli, no longer lives, but he started Eli's or Helmuth Bakery. And then his son, Luke, that would be your first cousin once removed, lives here in the community. And there's others, but it gives you an idea that there's this deep connection here to Kansas that was here before you came. Mm-hmm. So you came out here to visit cousins, and then who did you spot?
I spotted Emma, but I didn't tell her.
Ah.
Until I got left here, then I wished I'd have dated her, but I hadn't. So I started writing to her.
You started
writing. And she would answer my letters.
That is just amazing.
It just happened a little oftener and oftener, so it just, that's the way it worked.
Now there's some story about you kind of wanting to tell your guy friends, you know, that you were writing this beautiful woman in Kansas. Tell us about that.
Well, I used to take the children back and forth from school to their home and went through town, just a couple of miles over there, and then I always stop on the way home and pick up the mail. And when I got a letter from Emma, why, I just kind of went to my room and read it and stuck it away. Finally, I kind of wished I'd have told them already, so one day I did get one, and that came back, and the guys were up there putting a roof on the building. So I sat up on the top and tucked this letter and read the letter.
On top of the roof?
Yeah, I was up on top. Yeah,
just for the whole world to see?
I just figured they'd say, this must be an important letter. Then I was going to tell them, but nobody said anything. And then David L. and Mela Wagner came up, on committee members, and had a meeting there. And then the first evening we were sitting there, and Mela Wagner said, "Well, what does Ollie have to say about his spark in Kansas?" Everybody looked at each other. He said, "Oh, did I say something I wasn't supposed to?" I said, "No, you didn't. I tried to tell them already. They wouldn't take. They wouldn't take it."
They wouldn't ask.
I told them that story.
That's funny. Yeah. So I think Emma's sitting in her room here, reading a letter from you, maybe. And this, when you sat on the roof, was that in Canada?
Yes.
Yeah, you were at Red Lake because David L. thought you should go. Mm-hmm. And you wanted to date his sister, so you listened to him. That was good. That was thinking ahead. So tell us a little bit about Red Lake. Why did you go there? What did you do when you were there?
Well, the building project, I went in the spring first for the summer, 6 months.
Was this a mission?
Yes, at the mission, uh-huh.
And at school.
It was school and mission.
School.
We had the church in the basement.
So who did you school up there?
Well, I was not a teacher, except Sunday school teacher, yes.
Yeah.
But I was one of the workers to keep things going and building and things like that.
But what were they Canadians that went to school?
They were Indians.
Yeah, what was their name, actually? What kind of did they have a name?
Yeah, they did, but I can't
remember. What was it?
Ojibwe, I think.
I think it was Ojibwe, yeah.
And
so what you didn't teach, but what did you do while you were there?
Well, that through the summer, building projects. And then
did you build the school? I mean, let's be more specific.
Mostly houses, sometimes
houses.
For the Indians, for a couple of them for ourselves, for the mission. And
so you built them?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And did you did these houses have wiring and electricity?
I did. That was my second wiring job. Uh-huh. My first wiring job was my buggy.
Your buggy?
When I was still at home.
Oh, my word. You wired your buggy for sound?
I had 7 lights shining out the front, little things. 7 red lights going out the back. I had a headlight. And I had signal lights, blinking signal lights, right and left or all together, whatever I wanted. I had a backup light. When I came home, I backed in the... all the other boys had to push the buggy in, but I just backed mine before I unhitched.
Oh, my.
And I had electric windshield wiper. And I had a horn.
A horn?
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that made it safer.
Yeah. I mean, 7 in the front, 7 in the back. It sounds like something out of Revelations. Oh, my word. Oh, my word. Well, apparently you were a pretty good letter writer because, look, it's 1959 and you have a wedding cake and a bride right there. And this took place, look, this picture was over at El Rique. Is that where it was?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of like that picture there. You look young and ready to take on the world. Look at that. Ah, excellent. And is this after you're married or before? Here, we're in the strawberry patch.
Before.
This was before.
In Ohio.
In Ohio,
like,
yeah.
On my mom's garden.
In your mom's garden, yeah.
That little building back there is where I spent my first 8 years in school.
That was your schoolhouse,
A couple hundred feet from home.
You look really enthused about the strawberries here. That's good, yeah. And this is Emma holding... Laverne Jay, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a sad thing there. And we'll just look at some of these pictures. This is a picture of the headstone from over at the West Cemetery, and a picture of Laverne in his stroller out in the yard. Mm-hmm. Oh, let's talk just a little bit about Mrs. MacArthur and her wonderful birthday cake. Tell us who she was.
She was our landlady. And we were warned that she is hard. She really watches the people that work for her. And so Levi, my father-in-law, said he's going to have to quit. Wondered if I wanted to farm. And I said, well, I don't have any money. Came out of 1W service and then there at mission year and a half at $10 a month. I didn't have any money. He said, whatever we buy at his sale, we could put it on a loan, no interest for a year, and from there on, just pay it as I can. So we did, and it worked out real good.
And that's how you got going on the farm, because he gave you a lot of credit. And
but
you could
Mrs.
Pay
MacArthur had to give her word to it.
Uh-huh.
And so...
she was the landlady.
He came and said, he recommended me.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, it's okay. And we got along fine with her. One reason was because I did things like this.
You baked her birthday cake.
Emma baked it. And I decorated it.
You decorated it. Now, I want you to point out, there's a wonderful feature on this happy birthday cake here. This little thing right here, what is that? See right there? It's between the house and the barn.
A pool light, huh?
Well, it's a candle, but you put it there because you had a pole light with a mercury vapor bulb in it.
Yes, she thought so much of our... One day she came out and I said, see that light up there? And she said, what's that for? Like, that comes on automatically in the evening. In the morning, it automatically goes off. You mean it's on all night? Yes. Oh, I think that's a real good idea. Mm-hmm. I decorated a cake for my dad earlier. And I put a mound of candles of his age around for the fence. But I didn't dare do that to her because we weren't supposed to know how old she was.
No, 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 you were so prudent.
So I took that tall candle and put it where the where the yard light was.
That was really,
and we
really
went
terrible.
In and we took the children along, and Emma and the children went in first, and I followed along and carried the cake. And she said, what you got there? That's your birthday cake. She said, I never had a birthday cake before. And she looked, I said, this is the house, this is the barn, and this is your birthday candle. Oh, she's just so proud of that thing. So we took a picture of her with the candle, with the cake.
I'm so pleased because you've talked about her for many years, and this just last week is the first time I saw a picture. So for everybody who's renting, this is a good way to ingratiate yourself with your landlady. Bake her birthday cakes, but don't put all the candles on.
I should say something about her. Before she died, she put in her will that we can stay on the farm. The farm shall never be sold. It was put in a trust. And I don't want that land to ever be sold. And she told me, she's got us named in the will that we can farm it as long as we want to for the trust.
Mm-hmm.
And she died. That's what we were doing for about a year and a half. The trust officer called us in and said, we're going to sell that land. I said, you can't sell that land. Why not? Because of what the will says. Well, what does the will say? We have a copy of the will because we're named in it. So I told him what it says. How could they change that? He said, well, I wouldn't exactly say they changed the will. Yeah, I guess you'd have to say they did. I said, we don't understand what's going. But I said, I believe the Lord has something for us here that I don't understand. And I think it's to our benefit. So we bought the land, part we were farming. My dad loaned us some money. Roman Mass loaned us some money. And it all worked out so good.
And you're still on the farm there?
We don't own much of it. We own part of it.
Yeah.
Dwight bought part of it. Sam bought part of it. Sam and Marjorie. Now we have the rest of it yet, yeah.
Very good. Well, I'm glad that that worked out for you.
She was really good to us.
Yeah, I can imagine. And she would call you and ask you what you thought the wheat crop would make. And you would always guess 35, right? Bushels per acre.
For 4 years in a row, it was the time when crops were going up, like they did. Since then they did too. Then she said, what do you think the wheat's going to make this year, Ollie? I said, well, probably at least 30, maybe 35. 4 years in a row, it always made over. That's what I said every time, 4 years in a row, and every time it made over 40.
Yeah, so she was very proud of you.
Oh, right? Was she happy, yeah. Lady.
Yeah, now I have another question. You got much more than 40 bushels per acre. What was your best yield ever on that farm?
I never made 90, but I had 89 and a half one time.
Yeah. See, I would have rounded that up, 89 and a half, 90, but not Ollie, no. Yeah, so here's a picture of your family in 1984. I know this because I took this picture, and I came in 1984. And I see Daryl and Wesley here. And they tell us just a little bit about why you adopted Daryl and Wesley from El Salvador.
The first son we lost, and then we had 4 children, and then we kind of wanted 2 more and thought we should adopt a couple. So we got those 2 from El Salvador, yeah, about 2-3 years apart. We made 2 trips, first for Wesley and then for Daryl.
So I played a lot of pitch and catch with Daryl and Wesley when I came. I don't know if there's a picture of me in here or not, but if there is, you'll see what I looked like then. This is interesting because this is about 1980, and this is a picture of Levi. That would be Emma's father right there in the front. And you notice Ollie, Emma, and Marjorie and Karen in there from the good old days. This is Levi's second wife, Orpha. Mm-hmm. First wife died. Remember, she had cancer at your wedding. Oh, and this is Lester. This is your brother. You have to say a paragraph about Lester. I love Lester because Lester does exactly what he feels, and he's very concerned about having things done on time. He likes music, too. And at our church in Missouri, he used to stay with your sister Fanny's family. He would start weeping when the minister kept on preaching after he was supposed to stop. He'd weep loud. And I tell you, it's hard enough to you know, preach when somebody's crying, but when they're crying because you're preaching, you can't concentrate anymore. And people became disciplined and they stopped their sermons on time. And then he would march right up at the end of church and he would say, good job, you stopped on time. I really like your brother. So tell us just a little bit about him and how you interacted with him as you grew up?
He never could read, but he learned how to sing, and he could sing any tune that he's ever heard. And then a customer came out with a little toy organ, and then he played with that bump bump bump. He did, and then some of my cousins were there one of the next Sundays, and so they showed him how this works, and he can still play on the little organ any tune he's ever heard, including the Shluvaz of the Lope song.
Yeah.
So, but he can't read a word.
He's a savant that way, yeah. That's wonderful. Good. And he's...
And my sister Sue takes care of him, and her husband is a real good program.
Uh-huh. Oh, and right next to Lester, here's me in 1984 in Ollie's house. I came out here to work on Choice Books. I'm just putting a shameless little plug in for myself here. Choice Books of Kansas. This is what I looked like back then. I liked toques, I guess. And here's a picture of you and Emma. This was before I came, probably. This was maybe in the 70s there. Let's talk a little bit about when you started sort of, like at the end of your farming career, you added catering. How did you get started on catering? Why did you do that?
Well, I started smoking meats. I went to town, Westlake Hardware, and they sold me some seasoning there. You put that on your meat and then smoke it, it'll be real good. So I did, rubbed it on, smoked it. We liked it. Then I looked a little bit at the ingredients and made some of my own recipe, and I made my own seasoning, which is still being used at Arlington.
Are you going to pass out the recipe then afterwards?
Not that I know of. And so then people started asking for catering. And Emma made all the rest of the meal, and I seasoned and smoked the meat. But that seasoning, I quit rubbing it on. I injected it. And that is one of the good secrets of making some good
you
meat.
You injected it. Uh-huh. So how much did you charge when you would do a catering job?
Oh my, I don't remember. It was a real reasonable amount, but it was...
It was reasonable, like $10 a plate?
That time, I don't think it was that much, but...
Not even 10, yeah. And you served drinks and all the food and the smoked meat injected just like they wanted, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so tell us, is this the 8N tractor here?
Yes.
And if you look closely, you see that there is a very, very pleased smile on Ollie's face there. And the tractor's being restored. It was being restored for a long time. And I think there's a picture. Yeah, here, there it is. Isn't that pretty right there with grandchildren and the little thing back there? Wonderful.
I had it overhauled by someone else, but I painted it myself.
Painted it yourself. Mm-hmm. Very good, yeah. Grandchildren right there. This is a couple of years ago, and it looks like Camel was really in at the time. And this is maybe in 2016. Was that your 50th or your 60th?
50th.
50th wedding anniversary? Or was it 60? Help us. Oh, this was after the sale.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so it was four
That's
years
right.
ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's the family grown up a little bit.
More. Our children, us and our children, mm-hmm. and then the next one.
Whoops, wrong way.
And us, this is the us and our grandchildren.
And the grandchildren, yes, very good. Mm-hmm. Let's see, and this is an aerial photo, and you can't see the tenant house because of the big tree it's underneath, mm-hmm. but a lot of people have lived there. Now, when you were first farming, you hired people to work for you. I know you hired Willard Helmuth. Who else did you have work for you over there?
Gary Miller.
Gary Miller. Ha! Huh. Yeah, so was he good help?
Well, I kept him anyhow. I wouldn't have kept him if he wouldn't have been.
Excellent, yeah. So people get started on the farm and they go very far after that's the comment I can make right there. Wow. Well, I'm just going to list a few things and you'll just, you know, maybe comment on them. Things that you've done that maybe not everybody knows here. You taught welding for Pilgrim High School students for maybe 10 years. And I'm curious, has anybody in this room taken Ollie's welding class? Look at that. So people here have taken, that's amazing to me. I would have almost forgotten that. And you've built all kinds of interesting things. There were hydraulic presses, there were planters, as in things that you'd plant flowers in, torch carts, bike racks, fire rings. You made a swing, a log splitter, and maybe even a wagon were some of the projects. So I'm interested in that because I happen to be doing that these days, as in teaching the class there. You served as the chairman on the building committee when the addition got put on here, right? That was maybe 12 years ago already. And also, you took care of West Center Cemetery for many years. I know that because I took your place. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So people were very carefully buried.
I was also chairman of the building committee where Arlington Church went up.
When Arlington Church went up, you were on that one.
I didn't
as well.
Ask for it.
You didn't ask, yeah. But you did what you were told, mm-hmm. which is good. We compliment you.
I like
on
to
that.
Listen.
Yeah. So you served on some other stuff. I can't remember what it was. You made trips somewhere and you'd meet. What was that? For the church? Or
the CAM Mutual Aid.
Ah, that's right. Yes.
I was on there for 30 years.
30 years.
30 years. I made 34 trips to Indiana.
I thought you were going to say how much money you made, but it was the trips.
Yeah. That was a lot.
Yes.
Trips were all paid.
Very good. Well, is there any last thing or anything you want to tell everybody about your life or wisdom you've gained or, you know, advice you want to give? Because they're all listening very carefully right now. And while they do that, I'm going to ask Josh to flick on the last picture there that I don't have.
Well, I don't know. I just say I really enjoyed my time in every place that I was, like Cincinnati at the One Day of Service. I enjoyed that very much. We visited other churches too, and I learned some things there. And I enjoyed it so much at Red Lake. When I first went, they asked me for 6 months. And then at that 6 months up, they asked if I'd stay another 6 months. I said, yeah, I will. When that was up, they asked, would you stay another 6 months? And I said, yes, I will. When that was up, they said, would you stay another 6 months? I said, no, I'm going to Kansas. By that time, our courtship and our connections had been increased enough that I decided to stump it out.
I think we have time for the story about your first car. Your first car. So you were coming home from Red Lake to Kansas, and you got dropped off in Duluth, and you went to one car dealership, and they wanted way too much for their cars. It was like $450, right?
Yes.
So you went to the second, you walked to the second dealership, and tell us about
and
how you figured
the ones
it
out. That brought me down there kept on going. They had a meeting in Indiana.
So you were on foot.
And then people
and you had $100 in your pocket?
I had around $150 in my pocket, but I had a check from the bank in Cincinnati for about $300-some.
So you went and you haggled for a car.
Went for the second place, and they showed another car there, and they said, well, it'd be about $400-$450. I kind of thought, they said, take it for a ride. So I took it for a ride. And then I saw one of the lights wasn't working, and the windshield wipers weren't working, and I came back, and they said, well, how'd you like it? I liked the car, I said, but the wipers aren't working and the light not working. And do you repair things like that yourself? I said, yes, I do. Okay, we'll take $235 for it. I couldn't believe it. So I said, well, I've got a check here in my pocket from Cincinnati, and a bank in Cincinnati, Ohio. Could you cash that for me? He said, no, we don't, but there's a bank up the road here. So I took another trip
down the road. To the bank?
Oh, yes, everything.
Yeah.
And I came in there, and they showed it to them. And yeah, they just cashed it. Came back, and I paid off the car. And
what color was the car?
Kind of blue.
Just the 50. Color of your couch in 50. Your living room is what. Yeah, so go visit the living room. It's kind of, I don't know. No.
It was a 52 Plymouth.
52 Plymouth.
With straight
sedan.
Shift, with overdrive.
With overdrive. Yeah. I think that's the lesson. If you buy a car, get overdrive.
Then
wonderful.
Then I took it up to Canada. And then there for about a week or two, then I started down for Kansas. And there was a lady there from Kelowna, Iowa. She wanted a ride to Kelowna. And I said, oh, yeah, it's okay. We got to Grove City, Minnesota. Stayed there for the night. And from here, Harry Miller, Harry and Orpha, and the three children, and Lester Nisley were also there. The next morning, they took off. Had an accident. They called us. So Willis and I went to pick them up, came back. They asked if they could ride back to Kansas. So
your very first trip with your new car, and you had it loaded down with hitchhikers, really. That's very good.
It was four adults and three children.
Yeah, they weren't all buckled in, so that wasn't good. But other than that, very good, Ollie. Well, thank you, Ollie, so much for sharing a little bit about your life, and I hope you enjoyed the pictures and hearing some of these stories. And unless you have a last word to say, we're going to turn it over to Vincent.
That's all right.
We're good? All right. Well, go for it, Vincent.
Thank you very much, both of you, for giving us a good evening. Let's have one song yet.